welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Lauren Wolf, guest host of Prosody, and my guest today is the poet Malcolm Friend. Malcolm Friend is a poet and Canto Mundo fellow originally from the Rainier Beach neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. His work has appeared in publications such as La Respuesta magazine, The Fjords Review, Black American Edition, Alicante's Information Fields magazine, The Acentos Review, Pretty Owl Review, and elsewhere. Hi, Malcolm.
Hey.
Welcome to Prosody.
Thank you.
We're excited to have you here. Can you begin by reading some poems?
Yeah. All right. Ode to Bob Marley, Ending an Inheritance, after Hanif Willis Abdul-Rakib. Because that summer I finally learned what it was to carry music in my DNA, to have it sing in a way that makes your blood dance through your veins to the point it's fire. I never listened to Bob Marley much. Bob Marley is Jamaica, and to me, Jamaica was always the fire in my father's blood. The juvie sentence he got for breaking the bones of the boy who exposed his father's affair, or the morning after my father lunged at him for disrespecting my grandmother, how my grandfather said my father could never live with him, laughed, "You know, you'd probably kill me one day." It's 2011 and Bob Marley's I Shot the Sheriff blasts from some hot dog vendor's boombox in Soto, and with every note I could see Kingston and London and New York dancing through fire. And as he hands me a hot dog, my father says the chorus to this famous song almost rang, "Me shot the sheriff, but me didn't shoot no deputy." Until someone told Bob to straighten that crooked tongue of his, not understanding the irony of telling someone to sing a protest song in a tyrant's tongue. The same irony as my father carrying the name of a father who left New York for Miami and never came back, dying in the same city as Marley. But Bob, that day I learned not to blame you. I learned what it's like to have fire dancing in your veins until you have to spit it out in song. And when I took that hot dog from my father, I knew he was saying, "Son, don't forget the other island that birthed you." I knew he was trying to give me an inheritance that would never burn. Because Mom doesn't sing every song by the Temptations. He asked me my name, and I feel the tug on Mom's hair when he grabbed her once. Her neck snapped rubber band, her glare snapping back at him when she cut her hair short the next day. I've never met Mom's father, only spoke to him once over the phone. Thanksgiving in Chicago with Mom's family. Uncle Derek puts me on, and it's strange. Talking to this man I never met but already know. When he calls Mom Rion, her childhood nickname, I feel the November chill coiled around Mom like a snake the Thanksgiving her father locked the rest of the family out, spat the venom that broke the blood of his marriage, the reason Mom won't let him near her blood. She yells at Uncle Derek for letting him talk to me. Says he had no business bringing her kids around the man, and I thought about all those times Mom played the Temptations for us growing up. How she bobbed her head to my girl, glided her neck with just my imagination, but mostly sat silent through Papa Was a Rolling Stone. How I never needed her to sing it. Already heard her voice in Dennis Edwards' spit. Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home. She's always been digging that venom out of her blood. Out of our blood. This next poem is called Lamento Borincano, and it's after Rafael Hernandez's hit song of the same name. It also starts with an epigraph from Tato Laviera, New Yorican poet, poem titled New Yorican. It goes, Yo soy tu hijo de una migración, pecado forzado, which translates into, I am your son of a migration, a forced sin. Sale, loco de contento, con su cargamento, para la ciudad, para la ciudad. Dad is two or three. Carried by abuela through hallways with the stench of bacalao. He smiles at the smell, or maybe he cries, I don't really know. Can't know. What I do. Dad will mythologize this city. Tell stories like how he made fun of other people's Spanish. The white woman who mistook excitada for emocionada. This is how Dad is Puerto Rican. Todo. Todo está desierto. Y el pueblo está lleno de necesidad. Every couple winters, Dad visited Abuela's family. Picked mangoes from the tree in his Abuela's yard. He swears the fruit was sweeter. That he complained the entire plane ride back to New York. But he never went back. Never thought to take his family. Hopes his bedtime stories were enough to replace coquis, singing lullabies, reasons he never had either. Had to find another definition of Boricua. Y triste, el jibarito va, pensando así, diciendo así, llorando así por el camino. Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if Abuela hadn't died here. If the cancer hadn't rotted her inside out, killed her like one of her mother's overripe mangoes. I wonder if that's how Dad learned this climate wasn't made to cultivate us. That the mangoes would always be sweeter allá, over those waters. I wonder if that's when he decided he wouldn't go back. Borinquen. Ahora que tú te mueres con tus pesares, déjame que te cante, yo también. Afro-Seattleite fragment number 15. Jimi Hendrix plays the Star-Spangled Banner. Woodstock, 1969. This poem also starts with an epigraph. This was only the very beginning of a long, violent summer. From Aaron Dixon's memoir, My People Are Rising, Memoir of a Black Panther Party Captain. Distort the note. Bend it as many ways over itself before it breaks. Don't break it. Just burn it. Let it dangle. Let it bleed, fragile thing that can't breathe on its own. Parasite leeching off symbiosis between man and guitar. Douse the anthem in gasoline and let it ash in smoke. Your arson will be dubbed intro to a soundtrack named Vietnam. As if your muse resided on foreign soil, but just 1 year ago, Garfield Park and Madrona Hill and black bodies bent, dangled, bled, your central district was under smoke. Engulfed in the flames that have always seared it, that have always seared us. So if any ask why you dipped their precious anthem in gasoline and allowed smoke rise, tell them this tune always sounded like a purge to us.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Malcolm Friend. Malcolm, your poems are so rich. Exciting. I have so many things I want to ask you about, but I'll start sort of with the Bob Marley piece that you began with. There's some wonderful layering going on in there. So how, as a poet, do you achieve that?
Well, I do really have to give credit to the poet who I wrote that poem after, Hanif Willis Abdurraqib. He has some amazing odes to musicians. So really, when I was writing that poem, I was thinking of his odes in mind. One in particular that I listened to a performance of it over and over again, Ode to Biggie Smalls, Ending in Gold, and just all of the different layers that he had within that poem. So in terms of me layering that poem, I think it was really more so than anything else, me imitating him, trying to get all those different stories into one different poem, have those stories right on top of each other, bouncing off of each other.
So do you think imitation is essential to your work or inspiration? I don't like to call it imitation necessarily because I think that it helps us leap to another place.
I would definitely say that, and I like how you phrased it, inspiration rather than imitation plays a big part in a lot of my work, if only because that's just how I learned to write poetry, was by what I was reading. I would go through the library at Vanderbilt, where I went to undergrad, and just find as many books as I could and try to write like the writers I was finding there. So try to write like Kevin Young, try to write like Tato Lavieta, whose poem I epigraphed earlier, and just try to find my way to write like these guys were writing, because that was what I was into. That was what was inspiring me to become a poet.
And it always helps us sort of break out of our comfort zones too, or a shell, when we're trying to imitate. That brings me to, because you mentioned epigraph a little bit, and a few of your poems had an epigraph. So how do you feel like an epigraph works in a poem? I always feel a little afraid to use them. Like it carries a big responsibility to me. So I'm always intrigued when a poet's able to sort of weave that in, and I wonder how you come to that, or what role you see it play in the piece.
Well, I'll go to the Jimi Hendrix poem in particular, because that was one where I felt like I absolutely needed that epigraph. And that came just out of the fact that it was really weaving together two different things. So I had come across Jimi Hendrix, his rendition of the national anthem, through a protest music course. And pretty much everything that was written about that performance was about his rendition of the anthem in relationship to the Vietnam War and trying to protest American involvement in Vietnam, and his riffs as imitating bombs falling. But for me in particular, being from Seattle, the same city as Hendrix, and having read Aaron Dixon's memoir and knowing the history of what was going on in Seattle at about the same time, that was a time where violence was starting to spill over towards Black people. That was a time where cops and Black people in Seattle were really on edge. So I could not help but think of that when listening to Hendrix, his rendition of the national anthem. And I couldn't help but wondering if the situation in Seattle at the time was at all in his mind while he was playing the national anthem at Woodstock.
I liked how you said the poem needed the epigraph. Like, how do you know when a poem needs an epigraph?
Sometimes it's a matter of what's being woven together, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, exactly. So, just like you said, the stories that wove together, and then that epigraph sort of helps to place it maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
Can you read some more poems?
Absolutely. I think I'll read some sports-ish poems now.
We're all over the place.
Yeah, it's a big part of my life. So this next one is actually a poem dedicated to Ken Griffey Jr. I'm a big Seattle Mariners fan, no matter how bad we do each year, and it's nice to have one of our own going into the Hall of Fame this upcoming summer. Afro-Seattleite Fragment Number 8, Ken Griffey Jr., or The Sweetest Swing. It was never really level, more of a tilt, like the cap on your head pegged as disrespect to the sport. Back elbow bent perfectly, you danced. Not with your legs, of course. Front knee locked, back foot floating, but your hips played lead to your shoulders. Better than tango, better than the waltz, better than the foxtrot, hips gyrating so fluidly MJ would have been jealous of movement categorized only as sweet. Forget the outfield acrobatics. limbs swimming through stagnant kingdom air brought to life only when the ball disappeared from view and reappeared in your glove. One motion, your definition. Fluidity focused into your shoulders and your hips. You rotated with black hole at your center. Pure energy when your bat met the ball. That swing was confirmation to a kid in the South End that baseball was his too. Because baseball was you. Ball obeying your black hole, your dark skin. So dance, Junior. Let hips and shoulders share one last twirl at home plate. One last exhibition, so sweet I'll have to say. Goodbye, baseball. This next one is a persona poem from the perspective of former Pirates legend, Roberto Clemente. It's called Clemente's Letter Home, Dunbar Heights, 1955. And it's dedicated to Clemente's older sister, Anaides, who passed away when he was a child and who is very famous for having wished that her brother would come out white. Mommy, Papi, if black is dirt, black is nutrient. Black pushes beauty out between its hands, every black knuckle spotted with bright shades. If black is oil, black is slick smooth. Slide in the field, shoestring catch tracking ball. Ball slick slide from glove to hand and down the line. If black is shadow, black comes from chango above approaching sun. Freedom of flight. If black is night, black is lit by stars. Light bursts against its chest, its legs, its back harder than any crack of the bat. If black is coal, black kindles, warms, combusts, can't be contained. Explosion popping like Lolita's bullets, black bullets screeching louder than shouts in Lares. Black bullets claiming freedom in White House, from White House. Pero mami, papi, todo me dicen que yo también soy negro. Que negro es moreno. Que negro es preto. Que negro es bimbón. Que negro es Nietzsche. Black is not molasses sweeter than cane stretching miles under Carolina's sun. Cane, you roam, Poppy. Cane, you taught black to roam. Cane that taught black to swing. Black is not your shoulders, mommy. Shoulders that carried meat for miles. Gave sustenance. Negro es abuelo que no aparecen en ninguna foto. Negro es chamaquita deseando hermano blanco. Negro es vergüenza. Mami, papi, I need to know. If black is me, is us, which are we? Moment. Read another Clemente poem. This one is called Clemente Dreams of Death. Usually I wake in a sweat, sheets sticking to my back the way images stick to my mind, engine sputtering, sky disappearing, water hard as concrete as my hands clench tight. Qué linda manita que tiene. Lately my stirrings wake Vera. When we first got married, I shared everything with her, and she begged me, no hables así. Now, when my shifting stir her, I just say, no te preocupes, mai. Don't worry. Go back to sleep. And I grasp her hands in mine, smooth and soft, until she drifts back to comfort. Sometimes I think she sees what I see, dreams what I dream. Que linda, que bella. Some nights I sit awake for hours after the jolt. To ease myself to sleep, I remember the lullaby my mother used to sing. Que linda manita que tiene el bebé. Que linda, que bella, que preciosa es. I imagine I'll hear those words, hands clenched tight, when the plane goes down.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Malcolm Friend. I can't ignore the fact that you are obviously influenced by music, and you don't mind writing about pop culture, and particularly naming, being very specific about pop culture. So how would you sort of respond to the criticism that pop culture dates poetry or in some way makes it irrelevant? I'm sure you've had this come up before, right? This is something that I don't think is new, but it's a conversation I think is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and along with that, just the fact that if somebody doesn't get the reference, then how much work is the poem doing? Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, pop culture is, in music in particular, are very important just because for me, I grew up in a mixed race household. My mother is African American, my father's Puerto Rican, with Jamaican ancestry as well. But for me, pop culture was one of those ways where I negotiated identity growing up. So my mom would listen to Stevie Wonder while she was cleaning the house. She would listen to The Temptations. I mentioned earlier in one of the poems, growing up, sing along with the songs. My father would listen to salsa music growing up. He would also watch television in Spanish and still does watch television in Spanish. I speak about them like they're not still here. But my father watches television in Spanish from time to time, watches the news in Spanish a lot, and watches sports coverage in Spanish from time to time. So for me, pop culture is one of those ways in which I negotiated identity growing up. It also came up a lot at school. If I wasn't hip to whatever music my classmates were hip to, that was one of the ways where my identity got questioned a little bit. Mm-hmm. So for me, pop culture is extremely necessary in terms of how I negotiate my identity.
Mm-hmm. So then it becomes necessary in the poetry?
Absolutely. Especially since a lot of what I write is about my identity, how I identify myself. So mm-hmm. I can't really talk about that without talking about pop culture.
And so you don't worry about the critics that say, oh, I can't get the reference or...
Not really, because I know that there are people out there who do get the reference.
Right. The person that's supposed to hear it is going to hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's always what's so important. I'm also interested in the way that you write about place. It's also very important in your poems, sort of these rich landscapes, you know, very specific places.
I think I'm especially drawn to it with regards to Puerto Rico, because I've never been there. So I think part of it is just at a certain point, I have to put certain things in to make it seem like I've been there. If I'm writing from the perspective of Clemente, who mm-hmm. grew up there and spent a large portion of his life there, I kind of have to get something in there to make it seem like I know what I'm talking about.
Can you read some more poems?
And you know what? Let's go back to pop culture and music then, since that's what we've settled on. Afro-Seattleite fragment number 17. Love letter to Macklemore, after Marcus Wicker. When I think of you, it's usually morning carpools. The absence of conversation between me and Kevin. How I kept wishing for the hour-long bus rides because I could lean against the window. No expectation to talk to anyone. I didn't really want to listen to you. You were Tupac minus Black Panther parents. Snoop Dogg raised in Capitol Hill. But your music saved a shy Black boy from conversation. At some point, you seduced me. Something about a white boy owning his privilege and condemning our city racist eased the hours I spent in your Capitol Hill. And Kevin was Filipino, so that meant something, right? I rocked to white privilege and claiming the city. Called them 206 anthems in college. I could unfeel Smitty and Mark's rough hands in my hair. All those white boys who buried their fingers in my scalp, those shovels digging into me, thinking they'd find something I was hiding. Claiming me. Reminding me no space was mine. Not even this body. Always trying to unnap my roots, these clumps of hair that shrunk back onto my head, this body that shrunk back into itself on the bus back to the South End. I never imagined you as guilty. Mistook your attempts at penance for confessions of love and threw myself at you. And isn't that your guilt earning my love? Isn't that the beauty of seduction? So I think I'll end with a fairly new poem. It's called Ode to Tego Calderon, or The Day El Abayarde Dropped Was Maiello's Resurrection. And there are two ways to read it, horizontally, and then it's separated into three columns, and I'm going to read it in three columns. It isn't the salsa-backed intro on the cover, mirror held up, nariz into boca, drip over to El Sonero Mayor. Sonero, no bomba interludes, Maiello owned in Villa Palmeras. The Ecuae, you sing like him. Duera wasa wasa, we, lo prieto, lo niche, played back in reverse, taking place on stage. Negra, son un desfile, se alegra, horns heralding his salsa vieja. Esto fue lo que trajo el barco. Bimba, voz is drenched in it. Improv mutates over breakbeat. Bring us back to Santurce, the Huitinila sample. You're not to Luisa and direct to Puerto Rico. Styled yourself Abayarde, hand pushing out of casket, singing one more time. De melaza en flor que cuando, de su negrura todo. The fro you sport, the way you dip, make you vocal copy and dembo ricochet. Rumbone de esquina, ensalte de medio, lo difunto and the cry. A lo afro boricua, lo negro, and Maiello's entierro, Nazareno clutching mic, las caras lindas de mi gente, pasa frente a mí el corazón.
The poetry of Malcolm Friend. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 FM.